And it's secretly all Ash wants to talk about.
It is. I'm gonna, like I said, I'm gonna start my own mass cast where I just talk to myself.
Hey, you're listening to Mass Cast. This is Ash, and I'm just talking about Mass Effect for 4 hours. Talk to you later.
That's gonna be it.
You should make it a call-in show.
No one will fucking call me.
Welcome to the Radio Ant Podcast, episode 47 for nerdappropriate.com. I'm Sleepy.
Good morning.
How's it going? Good morning.
Good morning.
I got woken up out of a dead sleep to do this podcast, so it better go well.
I know. We were sitting around, and it was like, you're generally very punctual, and we're looking at the clock, and it was forcing Scott and I to talk to each other for a very long time. And we were like, well, we better call Matt and see if he's okay. So we called you up on speakerphone, and lo and behold, you were in a deep slumber.
We were exchanging tales of Tatooine in the magical balloon that floats over the Dune Sea.
Your tales of Tatooine were much more impressive than mine. I just wandered the desert like a hobo searching for adventure, and you flew in balloons and stuff, which is pretty cool.
Well, the thing that immediately came to mind is I thought it was like it looked like a Beatles ship, which Beetle is the character in Zelda who like always runs the shop, like the roaming shop that flies over the map, and you have to chase the shop down to buy things.
I made a joke
about it in the chat. And
did anyone get it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, went over.
Oh, yeah?
Very well. Yeah.
Oh, good.
I got a lot of FTWs for that one, so.
Very nice.
I was proud of that. Yeah.
Awesome. So this is actually episode 47 of the Rated NA podcast. We're doing it remotely again, so you may hear a couple of audio issues here and there, but we are going to work them out as we continue this remote broadcast. How are you guys doing? What's been going on? Well, actually, should we mention what we're going to talk about today?
Sure.
Sure.
All right, well, let's see. We're going to start out talking about the big Resident Evil 6 announcement from Capcom, which I'm pretty excited about for obvious reasons. We had we interviewed a guy on here last year, about halfway through the year, director Nicholas McCarthy, who did a short film called The Pact, which I really liked. And it turns out other people liked it too, because they hired him to do a feature version of it. And turns out the feature version turned out okay, too, because it premiered last night at Sundance. So we're going to talk about that for just a few seconds. And Matt's going to spread some knowledge upon us with some SOPA information. Not SOPAPIA, even though SOPAPIA is delicious.
What is SOPAPIA? Mm-hmm.
SOPAPIA, it's like a sweet dessert. It's a Mexican dessert, right?
It is, yeah.
What is it fried?
Of?
I think it is fried. It's like a fried, like, elephant ear looking thing with ice cream on it, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think.
It is, you're basically right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a mix between what an elephant ear looks like. What's the fried shit at fairs?
Other than elephant ears? Funnel cakes.
Yes, it's like a big funnel cake.
Oh, my mercy. I'm going to have one of those later today. And we're also going to talk about some strange information. James Vega, the newest crew member of the Normandy in Mass Effect 3, is actually going to be voiced by Freddie Prinze Jr., which is going to be different. So we're going to talk a couple minutes about that. And why don't you guys tell them what reviews we're going to go through?
Let's see. We're going to talk about Alcatraz now that it's out. And have you watched it? We've all seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, watch it.
No, it was on. It was on when my cable was out, and so I had to wait for it to re-air. And I think it re-airs tonight at 8. So I'm gonna watch it.
All right.
It's on Hulu.
Is it?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, then never mind.
Fox.
Also, in Resident Evil news, we're gonna talk about the 3DS demo that was released on Tuesday.
I gotta get that.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about Asura's Wrath. The Kingdoms of Amalur demo that came out, I think, also this past Tuesday, and the Mass Effect Invasion #4 comic, which wrapped up that comic series. And actually, I just found out about what the next comic series is going to be as well.
Awesome. I'm pretty excited for that.
And what are we doing for our open thread today?
Well, the open thread was conceived by Scott via a text message. Hey, what the heck should we do an open thread about? And a lot of information has been kind of released recently about the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer. I think Game Trailers had a big segment on it this week. And so we asked some of our Twitter friends what race and class are they most excited to play and why. And so we have some pretty cool responses about that. And so I guess we'll nerd out about Mass Effect near the end of the show.
Sweet.
Cool.
So, Matt, you had a story to tell?
Yeah, so for those that didn't listen to earlier podcasts or maybe didn't read the site or whatever, I work at Marvel Comics now. And I wrote a big article about moving here and how, you know, it was fun and exciting or whatever. And this week we've been hiring. We're interviewing a bunch of new web developers to hire. I think we've got like 3 open positions. And we've gone through all these different interviews, and we pair up. So like there's 6 of us on the team, and 2 of us kind of go at a time to do the interviews. Well, there's more than 6, but there's 6 of us doing interviews. And so I'm sitting in one of them. We do the whole interview and whatever, blah, blah, blah. I don't remember everything we talked about. I told him I'd moved here from Florida, and the whole thing's kind of ending. And he goes, "Did you write a blog post about moving?" And I was like, "Did I what?" And he goes, "Did you write a blog post about moving here to work for Marvel?" And I looked at him, I was like, and I'm in the room with another person who like doesn't really know about Nerd Appropriate or anything. And I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, and he starts laughing. He was like, "Oh, okay." And I'm like, "You Google it and find it?" He's like, "Yeah, but it was a cool site." And I was like, "Oh, okay."
That's crazy.
So he like found the article,
encountered
and read the whole thing. Yeah, and then went through the rest of our site and started reading stuff. But
cool.
Well, thanks for another follower.
It was the weirdest, just like I was just sitting there like, because it was literally the interview was ending. And you know, it was like, "Okay, yeah, it was good to meet you." And he was just like, "Did you write a blog post?" And he said it kind of quiet. And I like sat back. I was like, "What?"
Like, that's incredible. Awesome. That is really funny.
Total, and then the person goes, "What's he talking about? What's he talking about? I'm going to go Google it right now." And I was like, "I'll just send it to you. It's fine." Oh,
my. Your secret website. Good stuff. Well, that's awesome. I mean, it's weird how, you know, I've run into people at conventions and stuff before that you don't expect them to actually read anything you've ever written. And they ask you, you know, what site do you do stuff for? And you mention our little Nerd Appropriate site. They're like, "Oh, yeah, we've been there. It's a cool site." And you're just like, "Oh, so you're one of the 7 people who's visited nerdappropriate.com. Thank you, sir." Scott, why don't you go ahead?
Let's see. So what have I been doing this week? Oh, I started finally. I mean, because I started playing Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword.
Ah. Nice.
And it is awesome. And it really sucks that, you know, there's so many games that come out during the holiday season. And despite your best effort, it's really hard to play them all. So something always falls through the cracks. And right now, it was Legend of Zelda, but
that game ended up on a lot of best of lists. A lot of people really, really enjoyed that game.
Yeah, there's the formula is still pretty much the same as previous Zelda games, but for whatever reason, it seems like this game has more purpose behind it. Like you really feel like you're doing something important. It does a better job of bringing you into the story and making you interested about, like, why you're doing the things that you're doing in the game. But I mean, really, it's not so different from like the Wind Waker or something of that, but they really did improve upon the systems in the game. Like now you can, they've always sent you out to collect items from killing enemies and stuff like that, and there's never really any point to doing that. And now you can actually upgrade all of the items that you carry with you, which is something that you weren't able to
do
before.
Cool.
It's kind of cool, yeah. It's just like it gives you like a little edge and it kind of rewards you for actually going on all these sort of going out of your way to explore and stuff like that. And you can you fly in the game, which is the flying mechanic is awesome, and the sword play is fun. I mean, this is the first one that used the motion control to control the sword, and that all works really well. So it's a good game. Hopefully we can talk about it later when I finish it.
Yeah. Oh, I was gonna say the one thing I actually haven't been playing much at all of anything this week, but I have been watching Warehouse 13.
Oh yeah, how is it?
And it's awesome.
Is it?
It's totally a Netflix recommend. Yeah, it's really, really good.
Did you? Now you were watching Eureka before. Did you finish all of that?
I haven't seen the final season of Eureka yet, but they're not so tied together. Weirdly, yeah. All of the characters from Eureka just showed up in Warehouse 13, not as Eureka characters, which is weird because they've done crossovers too, where they show up and they are characters.
Yeah,
but that's like later on, and I just finished the first season, so I'm about to start the second. But it's really good. It's like a really fun sci. I think you'd like it, Scott, a lot.
Yeah, I feel like Sci-Fi, the network, is like very stingy with their content, and I wish there was some way that we could meet in the middle with, you know, like the viewers and them to meet in the middle to actually get access to their content, because for the most part, it's really hard to catch up with something if you didn't watch it when it aired.
Right.
And I mean, it's cable channel.
I think they've got all four seasons on Netflix right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And although it's a cable channel, it's owned by whatever, NBC Universal. So
NBC.
Yeah. I feel like there should be more, but that's awesome. Ash, what have you been up to?
Busy week at work, as per usual. I did get a chance to try out a lot of those demos, which we're going to talk about today. So I wrote a lot this week. I put up a handful of articles. Pretty excited about the Resident Evil stuff. Being a big fan, I was not anticipating a new game this year, so that pretty much sucked up one of my whole nights this week, just kind of reading press releases and
consuming things.
Yeah, looking at the footage and like talking to one of our friends at Capcom and stuff. About a little bit of stuff I can't really talk about, but secretive stuff. But all in all, I mean, really, really awesome. Really good week. I played a lot of Star Wars too. I would sneak on, in the evenings for a couple hours, and I'm quickly making my way toward level 50. I'm pretty excited about actually maxing out, and I'm going to actually try for it this weekend.
What do you do when you get there?
I don't know yet. I'm kind of excited because I feel like I'll PvP a lot, because that's what I did in WoW and stuff. So maybe I'll do a little PvP. Maybe I'll finally go into the dungeons, the flashpoints, the high-level flashpoints. I'm excited about the Rise of the Rad Ghul that they just released this week, the new flashpoint.
Did it end up coming out?
Yeah, it came out, I think, 2 days late, but it's supposedly a horror-themed flashpoint, which I'm excited about. It's like a very dark, ominous.
And have you done any of the operations yet? I don't even know what those are or how to get them.
No idea. I have no clue. And I'm such a dumbass for not knowing what those are, but I honestly have no idea what an operation is.
That's the only game system that I really haven't gotten into yet.
Yeah, I'm curious as to what they are, but yeah. So yeah, busy week but fun. Pretty good week. Eager for some new stuff coming out soon, and glad to have the day off.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Real quick, operations are missions that are built for 8 or 16 players.
Oh, so they're raids. Okay. That's just a fancy name for raids. So that's,
I don't know what that is either. I'll take your word for it.
Raids are just like bad. They're bad. Raids are bad.
they're like big treasure things, right? Like
yeah, you go in for, in the old days you'd go in for many, many hours. And you'd fight really, really challenging bosses that have multiple stages. And
is that where 50 DKP minus came from?
It is.
Is that a raid?
Yeah,
that is exactly where that came from.
Yeah,
I totally understand now.
So it's that's not something I'm probably ever going to be a part of again. So I'm content with my average gear that I get from running around.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, they look good. They look good. Maybe we'll do them someday.
Indeed. Indeed. Cool. Well, let's take a break and come back with a whole shitload of news. What do you say?
Sounds great.
All right. We'll be right back. Okay. Welcome back. We're going to do some news. Let's go ahead and start off with Resident Evil 6, which was just announced this week from Capcom. And I was a bit surprised because I really wasn't anticipating it at all. So did you guys get a chance to actually see the trailer?
Yes, I did. And I have a question about this trailer.
You do?
Yeah, it's it looked very action-packed, and it didn't look like a survival horror game. So are they going in a new direction with this franchise, or was this just something that happened as a result of the video? It looked like a more of an action game and not survival horror.
That's a great question. And if you I know you guys have at least like looked at 5. I don't know if you guys have played through 5 yet, because it was kind of critically lukewarm, to put it nicely.
We started it, but we haven't actually. I think what did we get through, Scott? Like the first, was it even the first chapter, or was it just like the?
We killed like the first large creature that we could kill in the game.
Yeah,
where we had to like trap him in a furnace or something.
It was like, there was probably like 3-4 hours of playing, maybe like 2-3.
Okay, well, I mean, you guys remember 5 wasn't exactly kind of
good.
Well, I liked it, but I'm very biased though, but 5 was different. It wasn't, you know, old school survival horror like Scott was just saying. I think 6 is going to try and head back to that, but what I think it's going to do is introduce a much more fluid, much more enjoyable gameplay to that formula. So I think the days of that claustrophobic, slow plotting survival horror, I think those days are over, just because I don't really feel as though there's an audience for it anymore. That's one thing, even though we, all of us here, enjoy Dead Space, and I think Scott's probably the biggest fan of Dead Space. Dead Space 2, even though it did very well critically, it didn't sell all that well. And I think part of that was the fact that the gameplay mechanics were, you know, even though I enjoyed them, it didn't appeal to modern gaming audiences, you know, people that want a faster paced, more fluid experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what this new Resident Evil 6 is going to do, and just judging from judging from that trailer, I think it is going to be a much more action oriented title. But from what I saw, it does look like they are going to, you know, still have that claustrophobic feeling. It looks like Leon's still going to be creeping through the sewers and, you know, going through old tunnels and things like that. So I think, you know, I think it's going to do its best to scare you.
It does seem like a sort of fan service too, that trailer did, at least, where, I mean, who was it? It was Leon, Chris was in it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wesker.
I don't know if actually if Wesker is in it. I don't think he is this time. I think they're actually going to keep him dead.
There was a dude in a black jacket who like jumped off of a helicopter and landed on the tower and then started running. I think they showed Wesker.
Oh, okay.
Unless I'm totally wrong, it looked a lot like him.
Oh, okay. Well, from what I understood is that they, spoiler alert, they kill him in 5, and he's pretty much dead unless they decide some way to bring him back. But
maybe it was just Leon in like a black jacket. I don't know who it was. Somebody was wearing. It looked like Wesker.
Well, there's supposedly going to be 3 playable protagonists in the new game. There's the guy, the fast moving guy that was jumping around, who people don't really know who he is yet, and it could be Wesker or someone with Wesker's DNA. We have no idea. And then there's, okay, of course, Leon, who's going to be in the United States. And he's going to be like in a small town, USA, where a zombie apocalypse kind of breaks out. And then Chris is going to be with the BSAA, who are like the new, sort of like the new STARS members. They're like an anti-bioterrorism unit. And he's going to be with them in China. And somehow all of the stories are going to end up intertwining in one big giant.
Well, I may have been watching it. I mean, I wasn't watching it at work, of course. Why would I watch that video at work?
Because you're supposed to be working at work.
Yeah, I mean, that's just dumb. But I may have been watching it. I may have been watching it in a situation where I could not pay close attention to what was going on. So I might have just saw the new character and thought it was Wesker when I saw it. So
okay. You can always tell your work that you're doing research for the next Marvel vs. Capcom game.
Yeah, I'm not really involved in those, weirdly enough. I'm excited. Like, I want this to be good. I think the problem with 5 that I had was that while they made it more action-oriented, they didn't actually, like, it was still the same game. It was still 4, but they just put more action in it. And, like, you don't really move. You can't really, like, run and gun. So it's, like, the action just became difficult. Like, it just became hard to manage because you're still in that same, like, you know, was it slow walk to shoot if you want to shoot? Or can you even move at all while you're shooting? I don't remember.
You couldn't in 5. You couldn't move and shoot at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just felt like they were, like, forcing action into a gameplay situation that otherwise didn't really allow for it. And this definitely looked a lot more like, it honestly looked very Gearsy. So I don't know. I hope it's still scary. I hope it's still that they don't go totally action, but I could see action being good if they pull it off right.
It's always difficult to figure out what a game is actually going to be until you get to see gameplay footage. And that's really a problem with game trailers in general, is that, like, a game trailer can show you anything, but it doesn't necessarily represent the gameplay, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's all, like, a game like that, a third person, essentially, you know, Resident Evil was a third person shooter before there really were third person shooters. But the feel of like how the controls feel in your hand and how the character moves and reacts, that's all, like, we're not going to know what that's like until we play a demo or we get our hands on it. I mean, we can look at screen, can look at video footage all we want, but we're not going to be able to tell if it's good or not until we actually touch it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you guys seen, there's one survival horror, not to get off topic, but it's just one game that I don't think we've talked about that I'm actually starting to get excited about. Is I Am Alive? Have you guys looked at trailers for that?
I did. I hear it's incredible.
I think the reason, like, I will play Resident Evil 6 because I love the Resident Evil franchise, and I'm sure I will enjoy it unless it's just hacked gameplay. That's usually the only reason I don't enjoy a Resident Evil game, which is only once, and it was 5. But well, it's twice. Also, was it Nemesis?
3 with Jill and.
No, it wasn't one of the numbered ones. It was one of the other ones that they put out.
Oh, Code like, Veronica? Was it?
No, it was on PS2.
I don't know.
They made some light gun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it was like...
was it on rails?
Yeah, yes.
Ah, okay.
Which one was
Nemesis,
that, Ash?
Wasn't it?
I never played... 3 is Nemesis, but 3 was PS1, and that was just Jill and Carlos, and then... After 3 was...
Maybe it was PS1. I don't think it was PS1, though. I think it was PS2.
Was it the Umbrella Chronicles?
That was for Wii, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Darkside Chronicles, too. Those were the Wii games.
It was one of those weird one-offs. It was on rails, and you ran and gunned, essentially, and then, like, Nemesis would just show up on rare occasion, and you'd have to, like, kill him, and then he would go away, and then he would show back up again. It was very, like, not Time Cop. Is it Time Cop, the arcade series, where you... Yeah, Time Cop.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's very much like that, but set in Resident Evil. Anyways, regardless, I Am Alive really excited me just because it took this kind of same genre of Resident Evil or Silent Hill or something, and it puts it in such a crazy setting. It just looks awesome, so I got really excited about that. It'll be neat to have two kind of takes on the Resident Evil, like that classic, you know, survival horror game, and then like this new setting and new kind of feel to the game. So
it looks like I Am Alive might be an arcade title.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Is it?
That's
what the box art.
It's Naughty Dog, right?
There's
one coming out for the Xbox too.
There's an Ubisoft game called I Am Alive, and they actually show the box art on the Ubisoft website, and it's an arcade box art.
Oh wow!
No, I think I'm talking about the new Naughty Dog one, right? Don't they have the new one coming out called? I thought it was called I Am Alive.
That's called The Last of Us.
Oh, that might be what I'm thinking of. Very similar themes, I think, in both of those games, which is why they're kind of mixing together in my mind.
Yeah.
But
is it? No, I was thinking of I Am Alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I Am Alive looks really good.
Yeah, that's a Ubisoft. It looks like arcade title, and then The Last of Us is the Naughty Dog project for PS3.
Anyways, moving on.
Not to be confused with Alan Wake, that American Horror Story or whatever that's going to be called.
I guess the point being that there's a lot of survival horror out there, and I'm glad to see that while Resident Evil's still surviving, that people are doing new twists on it too.
Yeah, and I was really excited when it was announced because ever since 5 came out, it's been a couple years now, and people seem to have lost a lot of love for the series because of 5. And so when I saw the trailer for 6, and then you just saw the response sort of on forums and, you know, on Twitter and things like that, and people seemed genuinely excited, and there was a lot of positive. there's a lot of positive energy for the series. So I hope that it does well, and I think it will. I can't wait to see a little bit more stuff about it. So, cool. Yay, Resident Evil 6.
Yay, we're back.
Yeah, cool. Matt, why don't you talk? Are you at liberty to talk about SOPA now?
Yeah.
Are we
I can
clear?
Always talk about it.
Yeah.
I can always talk about it.
All right.
I just can't talk about it. No. So there was two laws, I guess, going through wow, my brain just melted, I think, somehow. There's two bills being passed, both in the Congress and the Senate. The Congress had one called SOPA, which is the Stop Online Piracy Act. And then the Senate had one called PIPA, which is PIPA, and it was the Protect IP Act.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah,
sure.
Protect IP Act. Both of them were aimed at the same exact thing, which was basically hammering down what they said their goal was hammering down on foreign piracy of American online things. So movies, TV, mainly movies, TV, and music, which is the big three that have been pushing for this. It actually got entered as a bill. It was a while ago. I want to say it was like 3 months ago, 4 months ago, maybe, where it started hitting Congress and started getting put together. And there wasn't a lot of hubbub about it. I mean, if you were really paying attention online, people started talking about like, oh my God, you need to watch out for this bill. Hopefully it doesn't ever make it to the floor, but it's called SOPA. And what it does is it essentially allowed, and I'm just going to use any, just using an example. It essentially allowed somebody like, let's say Viacom, let's say we put up a video about
The Daily Show.
The Daily Show, which is owned by Viacom. And we didn't have the rights to play it or whatever, which is pretty commonly happening, but, you know, whatever. Let's say we grab the video from YouTube, we throw it up because it was related to a game. Viacom could then put a request in to our service provider, who would then basically make us disappear from the internet. They would shut down our DNS so that no longer would nerdappropriate.com link to anything. They would remove us from any search results so that we could no longer be found, even if you started searching for our content to get to it. And basically, they wouldn't take us off the web. They would just make us not really exist. Like, they made it so that you couldn't really do anything. The scary part about it is this was with no trial, with no proof. They didn't have to do anything. They could just put a request in and have it happen. Which is kind of terrifying when you think about it. And then there was no recourse for us. The only thing we could do is go to our provider and say, hey, you know, this isn't right. It wasn't illegal. And then we have to enter into a legal battle with Viacom over getting our name back and getting back online. If you were the one posting the videos, let's say you recorded The Daily Show direct to your computer and you posted it up on YouTube, you were jailable up to 5 years.
Yikes.
For that act alone.
It's ridiculous.
They could basically find you through your service provider, arrest you, take you to court, and then it's a federal criminal act.
10 strikes though, right, from what I heard. You got 10 strikes, and on the 10th strike, they could basically prosecute you. But each offender could do it about 10 times.
But there was a fine process all the way up those 10 times.
Are you serious? It's so ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you could get fined every single time that you did it. And then on the 10th time, they basically threw you in jail for up to 5 years.
It sounds very heavy-handed.
And then the real problem with it is they kept going like, whoa, everybody's freaking out about this. This isn't about Americans. This is about foreign people stealing this stuff. We want offshore sites shut down. You know, we want the mega uploads, which actually did get shut down, which is another story. We want the Pirate Bays. We want we want to control that stuff. And everybody was like, well, that's great, but that's not how it's worded. The way it's worded is basically anybody that you feel like is, you know, doing something you don't like, you can have them taken offline. You can basically have them erased from being online whatsoever.
Right.
The other issue was that it then put the onus on sites for any content that was on your site. So a site like Facebook, a site like YouTube, where it's user-generated content, now becomes responsible for their user content. And you might think, well, that's not too bad, but that also means a site like us would then be responsible for people commenting in our comment thread. So if somebody came, if we wrote an article about Resident Evil 6, somebody showed up and posted some content about, you know, a movie about Resident Evil 6 in our comment thread, if we didn't remove that immediately and they found it, they could pull us offline for user content that got put up. So it was just really, it was like taking a sledgehammer to handle what a scalpel could have done. And, you know, I don't think anyone, and then the real big news is that the internet completely rose up and just freaked out about the bill on Wednesday. So Reddit went dark, Wikipedia went dark, Google had a thing on there. I mean, there was pretty much any large site had something about signing a petition or calling your congressman and getting involved. Google got somewhere in the line of 4 million people, I think, by the end of the day, to sign this petition that was anti-SOPA. Reddit and Wikipedia led really good campaigns to call into the Congress and Senate. And over the course of about 3 days from Wednesday until about Friday, people just started flooding away from this bill. There, as of Friday, I think both bills are now dead in the water. They've had their people who wrote them walk away from them. Most of the majority of their support left and just said, you know, we need to obviously rework this bill. People aren't very happy about it. So the bad news is that it even got to where it got. The good news is that we actually saw democracy kind of work in a weird way.
It was pretty incredible. And the fact that I had students of mine come up to me and ask me to explain SOPA to the class and stuff was pretty awesome. The fact that young people were concerned about it, because it was, you know, having those sites go down was, you know, they use Reddit and they definitely use Wikipedia. So having those sites disappear for them was a shocker. So they were very aware of what it was all about and they were very opposed to it. So it was really cool seeing democracy actually in action for once, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was a pretty nasty bill. It threatens a lot of things, you know, as far as these ideas that get generated on the internet, these sites that are now gigantic, like Wikipedia or like YouTube. If this bill had existed, those sites would have never been able to come into fruition. So,
and no one would have gotten any work done ever without Wikipedia.
That's true.
I probably would have been fired.
I mean, it is kind of amazing. Like, I did actually go look for something on Wikipedia that day without even thinking about it. I knew it was down, and I went to search for something, and I was like, good Lord, this site does hold an insane amount of knowledge, you know, and it's a site that would be threatened to not be around if this bill had passed.
Usually, you like right about now, you could probably Google just about anything, and Wikipedia is going to be the first or second link in your list. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know what pisses me off as someone who dabbles in the education field is when people dismiss Wikipedia as a sort of a joke. In terms of the quality of content on the site, sure, some of it is, but if you know what you're looking for, it is invaluable. And there's so much information on there that that is 100% accurate. You mean, if you are searching for something academically on Wikipedia and someone just writes a bullshit article and slaps it in there, it'll be down within 20 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, it'll get fact-checked and be pulled down within 20 minutes. Maybe in the old days of Wikipedia, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, if it's been around that long, I don't even remember. But 4 or 5 years ago, sure, it'd be easy to, you know, put up a fake article or whatever, but not so much anymore. It is becoming an actual resource.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's also a good jumping off point. You know, if you are doing research, you can always go find the references that were referenced in Wikipedia article and use that as the starting point for your search. So, I mean, it is useful, you know.
I'm kind of hoping this shines some light on some other kind of fucked up things that go on in the government too, because one of the guy who's the head of the MPAA right now, who is Motion Picture Association, his name is Chris Dodd. And if that sounds familiar, it's because that would be ex 20-year Senator Chris Dodd, who's now the head of the MPAA and was pushing very heavily for this bill. So it really bothers me when shit like that happens, and it happens in a lot of other industries. Like, you know, the head of the FDA came out of the big Monsanto, the big corn company. Like that kind of backroom crazy crap happens all the time, and I'm kind of hoping that this very public thing shines light on that a little bit. Like, hey, guess what? It's kind of screwed up that your ex-senator is now dealing with the Congress as a lobbyist. Like, that's kind of fucked up. So.
Sorry. You don't see the video, but Ash is doing strange things that I don't understand.
Well, that's okay. That's yeah. Ash.
I'm just a hand.
Oh, my God.
How you doing, Scott?
Oh, man. Why did they Skype? I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Matt. They added these,
okay.
They added these horrible filters. Hold on, I have to remove it.
Is this built into Skype?
It is. There's video masks, and I just made my face a hand. So this is just, I'm sorry, I can't help myself.
The eyeballs are the fingers, and then the palm of the hand is the mouth.
It's disgusting.
it's kind of like that Conan O'Brien bit, you know, where they just superimpose someone's face.
I don't know how to turn it off.
Oh my God.
I can't turn it off. So I'm glad that you guys did read about SOPA and knew about it. I figured we'd talk about it, and I'm glad that it didn't get passed, because that would have really sucked, because I got very used to the level of freedom that exists on the internet. So
I really debated writing an article about it. I just – I don't know. Because I remember I was like, how political do we really want to get on the site? And we had written something a long time ago about a different act that they were trying to pass – about copyright, and you know, I don't know. It's something that I think everybody needs to pay attention to, and I'm really glad that the internet kind of, the big guns of the internet kind of got behind it and really pushed this into the forefront of seeing what's going on. So,
absolutely.
Cool. Let's talk about Sundance and a friend of ours that got into it.
Yeah. So, let's see. Well, last year we had Nick McCarthy on the site, and we did an interview with him, so you can do a backlog search for The Pact or Nicholas McCarthy on nerdappropriate.com, and you'll find the interview. But he directed a short film that was incredibly creepy that I really, really enjoyed, and it was about a young girl who returns home after the death of her mother, and her brother's there, and it's about both of them sort of dealing with the loss of their mom. Now, you think it just – that sort of sounds a little bit like a Lifetime movie. But it's all incredibly ominous, and there's this like this dark kind of brooding tone throughout the whole piece. And there's all these weird references to events that occurred in the basement of this house. And there may be, you know, something that is perhaps living in the basement of this house behind this wooden door that neither of them will ever, you know, go toward. And the short film ends with the young girl, who was played by Jewel State, actually walking toward the door to that basement to open it up, and you never actually get to see what is behind the door. And it was really, really well done. It was maybe just 10 minutes, just very, very, very creepy. And I loved it. And it turns out, I guess a lot of other people loved it too, because he got an offer to direct it as a feature. And so he rewrote it. I read an article about him the other day. It said he took 2 weeks. He got the offer to make it into a feature, and he kind of fibbed and said he already had it done. It's already ready. It's already ready to go.
Totally.
Then he had to take 2 weeks and actually write it as a feature. So he turned it into a feature-length script and actually got it made. And apparently it was good enough to make it to Sundance. And so it premiered just last night, which was the 20th or the 21st.
20th,
yeah. And I'm eager to see how it went. And the cool thing about Nick McCarthy is he's a lot like us. I don't know, some incredibly massive magazine out of New York did an article on him recently, and I can't remember the name right now. But he had a kind of a bit of a rough time. He always wanted to be creative. He always wanted to be a writer. You know, he did his own stuff for a really long time, and it took him, you know, a really long time to get noticed and for people to understand that he did have talent. But the cool thing about the guy is he never gave up. He never gave up, and he never
surrendered.
He never surrendered at all, and he just kept doing, you know, what he had to do. I mean, he made The Pact, the short version, all on credit cards, like no funding. Just, you know, he and his wife just like basically borrowed all the money to make it. And so it is sort of a little bit of a Cinderella story. So for all you listeners out there, keep your eye out for The Pact and Nicholas McCarthy. And when it eventually does come to theaters, or Netflix or whatever, definitely check it out and let him know that you think he's awesome. Cool?
Cool.
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 Let's talk about some Mass Effect.
Mass Effect. Matt, did you see this Mass Effect news?
I did see it on our site, but I did not see it anywhere else.
That's how good we are, man. Shit.
That is how good we are.
Shit. Shit. So the thing I put on the site was She's All That, and then it was about Rachel Lee Cook and Freddie Prinze Jr. both being in BioWare games. And if you're playing the Sith Warrior in Star Wars The Old Republic, Rachel Lee Cook is actually one of your companions, and she follows you around and hits stuff with lightsabers. And it's interesting, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of strange that she's with me on a spaceship. And then, lo and behold, less than a couple of weeks later, Freddie Prinze Jr., also from She's All That, is... Have you guys seen She's All That?
Yeah, of course, man.
Parts of it? I don't know that I've seen the whole thing.
That was like our high school staple, wasn't it? I mean, I was one of them with like...
Matthew Lillard's in it. I mean, that's one of those movies.
I think one of those movies for me was Can't Hardly Wait.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Can't Hardly Wait. But She's All That was right. I mean, it was probably about 2 years before that.
That's right around the same time. I don't.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. But
anyways.
So you don't want to talk about She's All That for the entire podcast?
No.
There's that one scene where she's like, takes her glasses off. She's so pretty. Anyway. So. We've been wondering for a while. I got wind that James Vega was going to be a major character in Mass Effect 3, and we've all seen screens of him and everything like that. He's the new Alliance, you know, tough guy who I guess is with Shepard from early on in Mass Effect 3, from what we've been gathering. And we got wind that he would be voiced by someone famous. We never knew who, and actually, I think a couple weeks ago, my wife and I were kind of scouring the internet to try and figure out who it was, but BioWare are really good at like keeping secrets. They're kind of insane. I think they're better than the government at keeping secrets, because we searched like crazy to find out who is going to be James Vega. We didn't find shit. Actually, we found stuff on IMDb that was false. And so we're like, oh, he's not voiced by someone famous. So I think they put a false lead up on the old interwebs.
Nice.
Yeah. That's how freaking crazy they are. So, lo and behold, it's Freddie Prinze Jr. Game Trailers TV had a nice long interview with him, and he talked about his take on the character. It showed one of his recording sessions. And my question is, and we talked about celebrities in games, I don't know, a couple months ago at this point, but what do you guys think of Mr. Freddie Prinze Jr. being part of the Mass Effect universe?
Well, something I didn't know about him that I thought was really cool in the article is that you were saying he's been like a long-time nerd, like since in the 90s when we were watching him. He was like, oh, I read comics and I do this and that.
Yeah, and you know, I have a confession. The only reason I really knew that is because I, in the 90s, I was a big Buffy fan, and he, of course, married Buffy. And so I, you know.
Well, of course.
So he married Buffy, and I would, you know, stumble across interviews with him and stuff, and interviews with her where she would, like, kind of make fun of him for being a nerd. Be like, yeah, we were driving around LA the other day, and he made me go in all these comic book stores and da-da-da-da-da, and he collects toys and da-da-da-da-da. And I was, all of a sudden I was like, oh man, I have this newfound respect for Freddie Prinze Jr. because he really is one of us. And he, like the rest of us, drags his significant other to, fucking comic book shops and, and nice. He goes out toying and like looking for stuff. And, you know, and I think like back in the old days, he used to like hang out with Seth Green and like watch cartoons and stuff. So,
I don't really have a problem with it. I mean, I'm so unfamiliar with his voice and his body of work that I don't think hearing him in the game is really going to make an impact, for me at least, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it because I've never heard BioWare put a bad voice actor on a character.
That's kind of true. They do have literally the best voice directors in the business, and I think that's a big, big part of it. I mean, you can be a celebrity or whatever, but as long as, you know, if you have a bad voice director, you're going to basically perform poorly. From what I saw on the Game Trailers TV stuff with him, it looked very promising. Like, when I was watching the character of James Vega, I wasn't seeing Freddie Prinze Jr., which was, that's the whole point. You know, you don't see him. you don't want to see that celebrity when you're playing the game.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool. Like I said, BioWare has had other famous people in voice acting, you know, in their games, and it's never pulled me out of the game ever. They do a really good job of kind of moving them into the character, and I think good actors can do good voice acting. You know, like it's not. I don't think it's a 1-to-1. I don't think all good actors are good voice actors, but I think certain good actors can pull off doing really good voice acting. So,
I agree. Is it going to be weird? At this point, 3 weeks from now, when the press for this game gets absolutely crazy, and you see this, like, you know, on Spike TV, and you see this on the internet every single day, when the press really ramps up, is it going to be weird seeing Freddie Prinze Jr. out there plugging, like, our beloved franchise, though? Is that weird to you?
It's going to be weird if he looks different. I still have, like, 1994 Freddie Prinze Jr.
He's getting a little
Jr.
gray, man. He looks different. Really? Yeah, he's not, like, gray, but he's definitely aged. I mean, he still looks the same, but, you know. And the thing that was cool in the Game Trailers interview, he has a definite love of the franchise. He's played both Mass 1 and Mass 2 all the way through before he got the job, just as a lover of the franchise. So I mean that to me is kind of important. And I know majority of the voice actors in the game don't play the games, and that's completely fine. But I think for someone coming in almost as an outsider at this point, that is, like, definitely adding to his street cred, you know?
Yeah,
it'll be good.
Cool.
You want to do some reviews? You want to take a break?
All right, we'll be right back with some reviews.
All right.
That's easier.
Okie dokie, reviews.
Sweet. Well, I wanted to talk about Alcatraz now that it's out, but I guess I am now the plus one person who has now seen Alcatraz.
I know. I've been meaning to, but I had internet and cable difficulties for a while, and then I didn't realize it was already up on Hulu, or else I would have watched it. But I'm gonna watch it tonight.
I'll tell you what, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is good.
It is good? Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. I saw a couple second clip of it, and I saw our good friend Hugo, and he was looking pretty much identical as he looked in Lost. So that was kind of nice to see a familiar face.
Yeah, his character is pretty cool. Like, he's still kind of like your everyman, like sort of your... In Lost, he was always he spoke for the audience in Lost, and I think he still kind of does that in this show too, and that's kind of awesome.
Awesome, very good.
And from the trailers that I've seen, there were still things that surprised me in the show, so I was pretty happy with what I saw. I don't want to talk about it too much.
Yeah.
No.
But so wait, when you say you think that I'm just going to call him Hurley for lack of forgetting his real name.
Jorge.
When you say he's the everyman, I don't think he's totally the everyman there, though, because they've positioned him as the smart, know-everything guy.
Oh, yeah, I guess I was trying to say he's still, you know, that likable guy who's...
Yeah, yeah.
And he speaks for the audience still. I think he does.
Because he's the brains of the operation, essentially. Like,
he's the one
who knows what's going on, so...
Yeah, but overall, really fascinating, really good. The only thing I will say, and this is certainly not, like, a knock on the show, is that it reminds me of Fringe, like... more than mm-hmm. I thought it would, but I love Fringe. Yeah. Yeah, I love Fringe, so no, I'm not a problem.
Very
totally
cool.
Okay with that.
You know what a coworker pointed out to me, and I wasn't a huge, I mean, I watched some Lost, but I never was in it like you guys, and she pointed out the numbers thing. She's like, they already started with the numbers. And I was like, oh, I didn't even think of that. Like, the prison numbers are all, they're not in any kind of order. They're coming out in random order somewhat. And she was like, it's going to have something to do with the show. I just know it. I'm going to get sucked into it. And it's like, well, good luck.
That's okay. It's still a fun show. I mean, but that's cool. So that's, I don't know. Just want to bring it up. It's still a good show. I think, unfortunately, I think that if, you know, Fringe gets canceled, this is going to fill that void. And Fringe, this will probably be the last season for Fringe, unfortunately. So
it's looking like the press I've read recently about Fringe is saying that it doesn't really have the support of the network at this point anymore. So it's just going to kind of burn itself out, which is kind of sad. I'm way behind in Fringe, but I always really, really enjoyed that series. So
it seems like either a show has to be like crazy critically acclaimed, or it has to win a ton of awards to get low ratings and stick around. And
yeah, there was a Fox executive that came out and said that he basically said like, "Oh, well, we're not in the business of losing money," and you know, like, and that was kind of like a backhanded way of saying that Fringe, you know, doesn't make a lot of money, and it's in the Friday night time slot where it does okay, but it's like not. Doesn't cover the cost of what the show is.
Yeah.
And then he kind of backtracked and he said, he was like, look, you know, I understand the passion of the core fans of this show. He's like, please don't start a letter writing campaign. He's like, I can't handle it. You know, like, you know, he's like, I understand your concerns. He's like, I love the show as much as you do, but we can't keep it on the air if it's not making money. So, Joshua Jackson actually came out and said something to the effect of like, you know, he's like, well, I understand the circumstances, but, you know, the thing that I hope for the show is that if it's going to end, they need to tell the writers that the show is
going to finish it.
Yes. Because the writers at this point don't know if they're supposed to be writing a season finale or a series finale. And that's really what the problem is. So, anyways, that's your Abrams update, I suppose.
Good deal. We'll have more of those next week, I'm sure.
Ash, do you want to tell us about Azura's Wrath?
Yeah, so the convention circuit this year, Azura's Wrath was at, I think, both PAX East and PAX Prime and Comic-Con. It had a pretty heavy presence, and it's kind of released in the same – was supposed to be released around the same time as Dragon's Dogma. So these are, like, the big titles coming out from Capcom this year. Now Resident Evil 6 as well, so it's going to be Dragon's Dogma, Azura's Wrath, and then Resident Evil 6 this year. It is a sort of an ambitious idea for a game. You play essentially a god, and so all of your encounters are going to be completely insane and outlandish. If you think of taking the scale of something like Dragon Ball Z and then amplifying that by 1,000, that's sort of like what the fights are like in this game.
Okay.
And let me pose the question with you guys, for you guys rather. What is the
72?
What would be the problem with having a game where someone has that much power?
How would you die?
Really, how do you die? Okay.
How do you lose if you're omnipotent?
Yeah. How do you lose? Okay. That's sort of the problem I had when I played the demo. Not only was it pretty much the entire game feels like it's sort of an on rails Dragon Slayer. Quick time sequence, but also I don't identify with this bizarro four-armed hero who's fighting an enemy that's bigger than an entire planet. It was just almost too out there, you know. Whereas Dragon Ball Z was, you know, you're a relatively mortal person fighting against another relatively mortal person, and you know, it was believable in a sense. This was just way out there, and if they pulled it off with the gameplay, I could understand it being enjoyable, but the gameplay was just so simple. What did you think, Scott?
I didn't play the demo, but I wanted to ask you, is this based off of any other like property that exists, or is this an entirely new character?
I think it's an entirely new character, and from what I understand, it's loosely based on like Japanese mythological stories. And so like a lot of the characters and stuff you encounter are from Japanese mythology. So it's, okay, has like a sort of a strange actual tie to historical information. Since I thought you did play the demo, Scott, but I'll paint a picture for you. So the demo is split into two different sections. You fight against two different bosses. That's pretty much the entire demo, and I think that's pretty much the entire game, are these big boss fights. If you played Bayonetta, which I know you've played, Scott,
Yeah.
Do you remember that one boss fight that was like half an hour long and you're basically like climbing up some massive structure? And
that's exactly what I thought about when you started describing this to me.
Yes, that is the entire game of Azura's Wrath. It's pretty much multiple stages of a infinitely large boss that just goes on and on and on. But whereas Bayonetta, you had the regular game mechanics of Bayonetta herself kind of intertwined with that boss fight in between those quick time sequences. This was pretty much all quick time sequences. So,
This being a Capcom, i.e. like a Japanese game, like does it keep a score or give you a time for how long it takes you to beat these bosses, or how is the game sort of meta scored outside of you completing it?
Well, I don't think there were no scores. There was no timer.
Oh.
There was none of that at all.
That's refreshing.
Yeah, there was none of that at all. It was all just it appeared as though it was, you know, actually a story-driven experience, but they give you two like really weird chapters. I think they give you chapter 5 and chapter 12 to play in the demo, or chapter 11. I was really disappointed with in the second portion of the demo. You actually do get to do the actual fighting mechanic, because you know, it's not just all quick time stuff. The second portion, there is a fighting mechanic, but it was so basic. It was even more basic than something like Dynasty Warriors, with like 3 buttons, really, really incredibly basic. And then of course it would flash to quick time sequences when you damaged the enemy and stuff like that. So it just seemed overly simplified. Kind of ridiculous, beautiful to look at. I loved the character design. It kind of resembled a little bit like Street Fighter IV. Reminded me of that little the artistic style of Street Fighter IV. But other than that, I encourage listeners and readers to check out the demo. Let us know what you think of the demo, and please let me know if I'm missing something, because I really, really want to love this title, and I want Capcom to succeed, but I cannot stand behind this. I thought it was horribly boring.
Who would enjoy this? Like, if not you,
I guess. Diehard fans of anime and maybe Japanese culture would really like this. But the thing that as I was playing it and as I was getting through it, I was like, oh, that was kind of cool. I mean, it literally, spoiler alert for a demo, but it ends with you battling a finger that's the size of the earth. So a finger is like trying to poke its way through the earth pretty much and crush you.
Yeah. That makes me uncomfortable.
So there's this giant finger coming down and you're like literally just like rapidly tapping B to defeat this finger and like push the finger off you so the finger doesn't squish you. And I was like, oh, that was kind of cool to watch, but only one time. Like, I would never want to do it twice. I would never want to sit there and tap B for 30 seconds twice in a row to get this finger off me and have it not crush me. So
you're talking about a situation where maybe you've gone through this battle for like 10 minutes and then maybe like it's a 15 minute battle, but you die and then you have to replay those 10 minutes.
Yes,
again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With no differentiation. So it's going to be the exact same experience, you know, no matter what you do. So it just seemed like a really, a major missed opportunity. And I'm not going to be surprised, if this is going to hurt Capcom a little bit.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Cool. So moving on to a game that both Scott and I played a demo for, at least. We were talking about this last week because of our cross promotion episode, but beginning of February, Kingdoms of Amalur comes out, and the demo actually launched early this week. And I want to know what Scott thinks, because I haven't heard yet.
I thought this game was good. Like, I actually liked it. My only complaint about the demo is that it hardlocked on me after I escaped from the whatever dungeon lab that you start off
in. Was it after you fought spiders?
I believe it was during that sequence where I fight the spiders that the game hardlocked and I couldn't do anything about it.
It happened to me as well, and I had to play through it again.
Really?
I don't know what it was with that section, but I hardlocked as well, to the point where I had to actually turn my 360 off. And
That's what happened to me too. Yeah. And I don't know if this also happened for you, but somewhere like right before that happened, I lost the voice dialogue as well. So I was able to get the dialogue for most of the game, and then as soon as I hit one conversation and something must have happened where it was just skipping through the dialogue really quickly, and I wasn't hearing any of it.
Oh, wait. Maybe this bugged for me too. Is the main protagonist in that game voiced?
No, oh, okay. I don't think it is. But
I got really excited.
The characters I was interacting with, though,
they were voiced. Yeah.
Yeah, all their dialogue went away, and it went too fast to read, so I think like something was stuck.
Oh, okay.
And then I got to that point with the spiders, and I had to go into whatever, like, matrix mode or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the game stopped working for me.
Okay. Yeah, I had mine lock up too, but...
Everything before that, I thought was all right. I get it. You know what I mean? It actually... it reminded me a little bit of Fable, sort of in the sense that it was sort of like an action RPG style.
Yeah, and you're not the first person that I've read that said that. And actually, I'm guilty of never playing a Fable game.
Ah.
Yeah, because when Fable first came out, I was like deep in the thralls of World of Warcraft, so I never touched it. But
it's probably partially due to the art style as well, because it didn't try to go for that photorealistic look. They kind of went for like more of like a sort of cartoonish whatever, you know, style of
yes.
this game. Yeah. So like Fable does some of that, but then like the action, the RPG combat is probably the other reason for that too, why you can draw those comparisons.
Cool. But how did you like the overall gameplay and how the game felt?
I thought it was pretty good for that reason. I mean, like, something that I always thought was weird about Dragon Age is that they try to make the game look like realistic, and in the process, I feel like it doesn't always get there. So why try to go that far? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So, you know, like, I did, sometimes the controls were like a little strange. Like, it wasn't like completely fluid, but I thought it was really solid for what, you know, what I played in the demo.
Yeah, in terms of a new, like, large scale, you know, RPG, you know, they're boasting over 100 hours of gameplay with this game. So I am kind of shocked that it was as enjoyable as it was. I really actually did enjoy the animation, and I did enjoy the combat. I don't know if you tried stealth at all.
I played as a rogue, you know, like I used the daggers or whatever, and I did go into stealth, and I thought that was great too.
Yeah, they had great executions and stuff. Well, from what everything I've read about this, Matt, is that you're going to be able to change your spec pretty much on the fly. So there's going to be, you know, different skill trees, just like all these different MMOs. But there's the three main classes are, you know, basically warrior, mage, and rogue. And you can level up those classes, but then you can go to a skill trainer, and then you can actually start to level up your magery if you want. So you can kind of do a little bit of everything, it seems like.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was confused because the game didn't necessarily tell you what to do. It just gave you, you know, they start out and they kind of give you three sets of armor and then three different weapons. And they're like, well, you just use whichever ones you want. And I'm like, okay, that's weird. Usually you have to pick your class or invest in one or something like this. But I don't know. I thought it was cool. I think it also borrows a little bit from Zelda, too, like in the way that the game unfolds. So, you know, I like those kinds of games, so I don't really have a problem with it. I just... I hope that there is something in this game that does set it apart from Dragon Age, Fable, or a Zelda game. You know what I mean? Because right now I didn't really see anything that I was like, oh, that's different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm hoping the main storyline is actually strong enough to keep me in there for 100 hours. Because I don't want to just do grindy stuff. I want to go on a nice new adventure. And I hope there's a really strong supporting cast, because that's a big thing for me. I did like the introduction, and it's not really a spoiler because it's the demo, but you're basically dumped into a pile of bodies and everyone thinks you're dead. You have to kind of like dig your way out of all these corpses. And I thought that was, you know, beautiful in a really kind of gross way.
does it really feel like did the gameplay feel kind of like they pulled off the hybrid kind of RPG action? You know, I feel like that usually something suffers in there, and I'm just worried about the gameplay.
Well, to be honest, it was a little loose. It was, you know, it's definitely not to the level of, like, you know, a Platinum Games, a Bayonetta, or anything like that in terms of the sophistication of the melee combat. But it was definitely, you know, fluid enough. It was it was on par with like a Dragon Age 2 or other action RPGs that I've played that have actually been pretty solid. So I think it was pretty good.
Okay, cool. I'm actually going to get it this week. I've been waiting to get my new hard drive, so.
Oh, good, good.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, like I said, as long as they can do something in this game that makes it different from all the other games that are similar to it, I think that's really going to make the difference, you know?
Is it dropping in 2 weeks?
February 7, I believe, is when it comes out.
Cool.
And then you'll have your Mass Effect demo 1 week later.
Yeah. And all that sweet armor interaction.
Yes.
Man, that demo, I'm going to do a number in my britches.
You're going to lose your mind. Did you see this news that that the early access is really just, like on-time access and the, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, the Battlefield stuff? It's just a couple days, isn't it? Like 2 days early or something?
Well, the way it's going to shake out is that, they promised everybody early access to certain parts of this beta by purchasing Battlefield 3. And what it turns out to be is that the demo launches on February 14, and everybody will immediately have access to single player functionality, but only those people that registered early access will have the ability to play multiplayer or co-op components on the 14th. Everyone else will need to wait until the 17th, which is Friday.
Interesting. Well, I mean, I'm not upset about it because I'm just damn excited for the game in general.
Yeah,
but I can understand if you went out and bought Battlefield 3 just for the Mass Effect demo access, then you're going to be probably pretty upset. But Battlefield 3 is a solid game anyway. So
it is. And I'll tell you what, I actually picked up a copy of Medal of Honor because Medal of Honor promised early access to Battlefield 3 beta. And I'm not really sure that ever came to fruition, to be honest with you.
I don't think it did, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the beta just dropped and everyone had access to it. So, I mean, it is what it is. It's a demo. It's early access. You know, you'll be able to buy the game on the same day as everybody else. So it's just kind of more of a perk than a selling point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
On Tuesday, Capcom and Nintendo released the Resident Evil Revelations demo for the 3DS, which... is going to be... Ash, do you know anything about where this is in the timeline or what part of the story this covers?
This takes place before Resident Evil 5, before Jill's death. It takes place, I guess, before the Wii game as well. So, between Resident Evil 4 and the long period between 4 and 5 is when it takes place.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, this demo is it looks really good, and it plays pretty good as well. It definitely sort of pushes you in the direction of getting the extra thumbstick attachment for this.
Okay.
The game has three control schemes. You can play, in more traditional senses where, the thumbstick will move your character, and then you need to hold down a button to rotate the camera, and then the rest of the buttons do functions like... helping you shoot and using your items and stuff like that. Really, the control scheme that seems to be the best one is the third one, where if you don't have the circle pad attachment, you actually use the buttons to move the camera. And then the circle pad handles all of the character movement. And then the D-pad handles the activating of items and using your secondary weapons. Huh. Everything else you do in terms of switching weapons and accessing your items is done on the touchscreen. And then of course it uses that familiar LNR aim and shoot functionality, but you are able to move while you shoot, albeit slowly. And, let me think, you can also switch between first and third person views in the options when you're aiming.
Okay. That's very cool.
And I think the reason why they did that is that there's also an option to use the gyroscope in the 3DS to aid you in your aiming.
Oh, interesting.
But it kind of doesn't work because if you know how the 3D works on this system, you kind of need to be face on to this in order to see the 3D effect. So I think you'd have to turn it off if you wanted to use a gyroscope to aim.
Now, did you notice that when you activated the 3D, did it impact your frame rate and performance on the 3DS?
You know what? I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't really see the difference, and I prefer to play, I bought the 3DS for the features. Yeah. So I did play the demo in 3D, and the 3D looks awesome. The graphics look great. Like, it really does look good. The only beef – I had two beefs with this. And I'll just quickly tell you what they are because I've only been able to play through this demo one time. I was playing through the demo before I talked to you guys today. And while we were getting set up, I paused the game and I put the 3DS down. I'd probably been playing for about 10 to 15 minutes. And as I look back over to the 3DS, it says, "Thank you for playing," and kicks me back out to the menu screen.
What? That's weird.
So I suspect that either this demo is time locked, or even more suspiciously, that maybe once it senses that you stopped playing, it kicks you out of the demo.
Interesting.
The other problem is that, I mean, it's not a problem because it's a demo, but this demo is use limited. So when you look at the demo on the home screen, it says uses remaining 30. So you can only realistically booting access
30 times. Yeah,
you can really boot up this demo only 30 times or play through it 30 times before I assume it's going to stop working.
Interesting.
Why are companies so terrified of you getting access to content before... Like, either the game sucks or it's good, but, like, putting out a limited demo, it just blows my mind. I don't get it. I don't understand the thought process.
So, yeah, you're right. I mean, and what I saw of this demo was actually really good, and I think this would be a candidate for, a good candidate for a game for the 3DS to play. Unfortunately, the other problem that I just realized, you know, right before we started today was... Most 3DS games are $40. This game is $50 right now.
Interesting.
As far as the pre-order goes. And usually, like those higher price tags for Nintendo handheld games are reserved for titles like Zelda.
Yeah, you know? Interesting.
Really, that's like Zelda was the only title I think on the Nintendo DS that was $35 and everything else was $30. And this game is $10 more than everything else, you know?
Yeah, I kind of don't know that I can get a $50 experience on my 3DS yet. It's just not... I just don't think I can do it on a handheld.
It's a really hard sell. I mean, I will admit that this demo is really good, but that price tag is pretty harsh. You know, maybe they'll change. Maybe that's just, you know, pre-order and we're still working out the deals and stuff like that. But right now, that's what it is. But, you know, if you have a 3DS, go ahead and download this demo because it's awesome.
Good. Yeah, well, I'm glad you liked it. You made it sound when we were getting set up for the show that it was bad, and I was kind of nervous because the buzz on the old internet is that it's actually pretty solid, and a lot of people are very content. I'm glad.
That's what I was trying to tell you. Yeah, I was trying to say that the game itself is good.
Yeah.
And it's just some of the other things which are questionable. And I guess really the other thing would be is that this circle pad attachment, which would really kind of make the experience a little better in terms of aiming while you're trying to shoot, is going to be $20.
Oh,
it comes
fuck.
Out.
Really?
It comes out on, it comes out on February 7th. And it is exclusive to GameStop.
What?
In the US. Yeah. I just read that before we started. So.
Man. First of all, I don't have a 3DS, but if I had a 3DS and I was going to play this, I would have to use the control pad because the scheme you were describing was making my brain just hurt even thinking about how to move my character around. So I would have to probably shell out the extra $20, which would make it a $70 experience.
In addition to the price of the system itself. And then the real kick in the pants is that it's highly likely with Nintendo's track record that at the end of the year, you'll probably have a redesigned piece of hardware that includes that second circle pad.
Ah, okay. Shit.
So this will probably become a two thumbstick device probably at the end of the year, you know, because there's certainly room, you know, on the left side of the 3DS, there's a circle pad and the D-pad. On the right side is just the buttons, and they could very easily just add a circle pad on that right side.
Plus, it is a little small. That's the one complaint I had about the hardware was that it is like a little, it's just barely awkward to hold in your hands.
Yeah, true.
And like I ended up bumping the bumpers, weirdly enough, the triggers on the top.
Yeah.
I ended up accidentally clicking those when I didn't mean to sometimes while playing because my hands, the way I have to hold it, I have to like cradle it with my two fingers on the top. So
I'm fairly certain actually that the circle pad attachment is not just an attachment on the side, but it's almost like a glove that fits over the entire unit. So the LNR triggers are going to be more like triggers, and I think they found a way to add somehow another trigger on top of it. I don't really know.
I don't know that it needed more buttons, but...
So anyways, this $20 attachment is going to be more like a glove, and from what I've read, you're not going to need it, but you're probably going to desire it for games like Resident Evil and the new Metal Gear game that will be coming out on this unit as well.
When is Nintendo and their accessories? It's just like mind blowing. They're like, hey, here's this thing. Now buy $400 worth of accessories for it. And you're like, God.
It is strange that they redesign the hardware as often as they do. You know, like I think they redesigned the PSP a couple of times, but not to add entirely new functions to the PSP at the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, and it like harkens me back to the conversations we were having pre Kinect and Move, where I was like, you know, the Kinect's going to win because it's just one thing you buy in your living room and you just put it there and then it just does whatever. And everyone else is going down this like expensive, you know, accessory path. And, you know, it's just
absolutely correct. I remember going to Best Buy to pick up the Wii Motion Plus attachment to play Wii Sports Resort. And I, as soon as I bought the thing, I was like, you know what? Like, in 6 months, they're just going to have a controller that has this built into it, but I want it now, you know, and that's the problem.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move into our open thread.
All right. We'll be right back with our open thread, which is on the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer beta character and class choices. So we'll be right back.
This is Liara Tassoni from Mass Effect. You are listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
All right, we are back, and we're going to talk about the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, and we're also going to... Take two. All right, we're back. We're going to talk about Mass Effect 3. We're going to talk about the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, and we asked our friends on Twitter, what race and class are you most excited to play? And why? We actually have a lot of comedic answers this morning because it is early, and that's how people are in the morning. So we're going to go ahead and answer as many of these as we can. Any of you guys want to start out? You just want to start off with some Twitter answers?
I'll just say mine because I've been very vocal about it in the past. Yes. I would like to be. I just want to be a Salarian. I want to be a scientist. I want to be like.
I am shocked by this.
Yes.
I never would have figured you to be a Salarian or want to be the scientist on the ship. It's just amazing to me.
I really liked that character in the game, not just because of his profession, but because of the way that he like sort of viewed the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No,
I was kidding. I fully expected you.
Yeah. And he sang that song too, which was pretty funny.
Yes, that is pretty amazing. I know, Scott, you avoid stuff about the game, but game trailers did have some incredible new screens and stuff and some footage of multiplayer. And you do get to see, it looks like to be a Salarian infiltrator in this footage. And he literally reaches across a barricade, stabs a guy with an Omniblade, and pulls him across. And
that
looks
sounds wonderful.
Ridiculous. It looks amazing. So
I can't wait.
Yeah,
be great.
I'm pretty stoked. All right, let's go ahead to some of our Twitter answers, and we have one from Vexing Vision, or at Vexing Vision on Twitter. And by the way, if you're listening to this and you want some great Twitter folks, add all these people that we're talking to because they're all pretty awesome. So,
and they're all probably Mass Effect fans.
They are huge Mass Effect fans.
And we seem to have a large contingent of Mass Effect fans.
We do, and that
follows.
That is great because they're all super nice people, so I'm glad that they're fans just like us.
Yes, indeed.
And it's secretly all Ash wants to talk about.
It is. I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to start my own Mass Cast where I just talk to myself.
Hey, you're listening to Mass Cast. This is Ash, and I'm just talking about Mass Effect for 4 hours. Talk to you later.
That's going
to
be it.
You should make it a call-in show.
No one will fucking call me. Come on.
Do you remember that part where the Elcor told you to buy something? You know,
that was cool.
Oh, I love
that. That was great. Oh, awesome.
All right. So, at Vexing Vision says, if Mass Effect 3 comes without origin requirement, if Mass Effect 3 comes without origin requirement, it says I'll not play any race or class in multiplayer. If it does, I'll not play at all. So Vexing Vision is basically saying that origin, if we do have a lot of listeners that play the PC version of Mass Effect, which is awesome, but a lot of people are really upset about this origin requirement. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that this would actually prevent you from playing the game if this was the only platform that you could play on?
I think the game's going to be on Steam by the end of the year.
Do you?
That's just my personal vision for this. I think that Origin seems to have gotten a lot of negative press lately for things that they may or may not be doing with the software, and I think even from a digital standpoint, it's almost the same as saying, like, we're only going to sell this game at Walmart. And if you don't go to Walmart to buy it, you can't have it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
People are loyal to Steam, but at the same time, there are a lot of people who don't use Steam and only play games on good old games, you know, or only play games on whatever the download, you know, the one that you download straight from the website is. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't.
You can't make people shop somewhere.
That's,
I guess.
I think that's the big argument. People really don't want to be forced to buy things from a certain place. So I don't blame him for his response. I have no. This is going to sound horrible. I have no loyalty. If they said, "Hey, you need to go to a village and burn it down, and steal your copy of Mass Effect 3," I would do it. So,
yeah.
So whatever. Like I, you know, whatever. I just want to play the damn thing. So.
Yeah, I agree. Concurred. Yeah.
Let's go burn a village. Fuck yeah.
Oh jeez.
Fuck well, villages.
Maybe I don't agree with that part, but I do want to play the game.
Oh, okay. Let's move on to the villages? Next one. We have one from, I'm going to try and do my best, at Aslan Trista. I think I said that right.
Sounds good.
Aslan Trista or Aslan Trista?
Aslan's
she good. Says, Infiltrator, of course, my absolute favorite class. I'm looking forward to Engineer and Sentinel as well. I'm with you there, and we were just talking during the break, and actually I admitted that I'd never actually played a Sentinel, and only briefly played an Engineer, but
I've never played as Infiltrator.
Infiltrator is I did like I think two full playthroughs with Infiltrators.
Would you
awesome.
Guys believe that that's what my main playthrough is?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, the guy with the sniper rifle? No, I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. So I totally agree. And then she goes on to say, and would be excited, would it be surprising that I'm – oh, my God. What is wrong with me? And would it be surprising that I'm excited
– do it live!
– a Drell. Yeah, Drell is going to be pretty cool. And it looks like from the footage we just saw last week that a lot of the races are getting specific abilities as well. And I actually saw footage of a Drell kind of doing some kung fu.
That's fantastic.
Which is pretty awesome. So the new Drell model looks phenomenal. So I'm with you there, Aslan Trista.
Are we to assume that all Drell are ninjas now? Is that the?
Yes, yes. Just
the
like
Snake Eyes of the Mass Effect universe.
Absolutely, and just like how all Krogans are kind of the roadblocks of the Mass Effect universe.
Ah, indeed.
Please, can we please relate every Mass Effect character to a G.I. Joe?
Yes.
Person.
Let's keep going.
Yeah.
All right. Our good buddy, Justin Banks, who's at Midtown 583, he says that he's looking forward to being a Krogan, probably soldier class. I'm going to agree with him. I think my favorite character in the Mass Effect universe, other than Shepard, of course, is probably Rex. I have a huge crush on Rex, and I would love to snuggle with him. Is that gross? Is it?
No.
I mean, he seems pretty tough-skinned, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, it's all soft on... Never mind. So
that was my biggest... That was, like, the hardest decision I made in one where I was like, no, Rex!
Yes. Yeah.
I got him back. I was proud of that.
Yes, indeed. So Krogans are going to be ridiculous in this multiplayer, and I hope they have their signature charge move and their regeneration and all that. So they're going to be a beast. So I agree with Justin Banks. Krogans are awesome. Why don't you guys go through some of these?
Let's see. You want to go, Matt?
No, let's just both go.
go ahead.
All right. Thessair says, Volus Plumber. No, wait. That was his joke. And then he says, seriously, though, I'm very interested in trying out both the Infiltrator and Engineer in multiplayer, but I'm undecided as to the race.
Cool. At this point, I don't know if the class is restricted by race. So I don't know if you're going to be able to be something like a, you know, we'll just say like an Asari soldier. I don't know if that's going to happen. They haven't really revealed the specifics of that yet, but I hope they leave it open.
That's too bad, because what I want to do is I want Krogan with biotic powers.
Ooh.
Either Krogan Adept or Krogan Vanguard. I want biotic powers.
Wasn't Rex a biotic?
Yeah, Rex was, I think he was a Vanguard. Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't have charge yet, so the Vanguard just had like a couple pushes and stuff like that. Charge wasn't put in until 2, but he was a biotic, which is pretty cool. So hopefully they do that. I agree with you. That'd be awesome. I agree with you.
So that is mine.
Cool.
Axel99 wrote, oh, sorry, you want to do it, Scott?
Yeah, sure, whatever. Our good buddy Axel99 says, who knows what other races, classes we can play with. I'd like to be a Rachni queen who can spit out soldier drones.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah. That's a Rachni. Man, I hope they do stuff like that. Totally off the wall, bizarro, you know, just like sub races that exist in the Mass Effect universe. That would be so much fun. And I don't think we'll see Rachni queens as playable characters, but I would totally be into that if they did. That'd be awesome.
And then she also says, Krogan soldier for soloing multiplayer because I heard it was possible. BioWare hasn't put out the full race list yet. Well, we're being fanciful, okay? We're just picking out the things that we want.
Yes. Yeah.
Scott got really defensive there for a second.
No, he's ready to battle.
Look, okay, this is what we're doing.
No.
No, but I agree. I think stuff I've read that says that, you know, same as like Horde mode in Gears of War. It appears like you can solo for a little while and then it just gets a little overwhelming. It's going to be the same thing in this Mass Effect multiplayer mode. You're going to be able to solo a bit, but then there is going to be a point, there is going to come a point where you're going to have some buddies. But Krogans with regeneration, shoot, sounds good to me.
So at Michael Coles says, human soldier, I'm boring. Frowny face.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know what?
I didn't even think that human as a playable race didn't even cross my mind for co-op multiplayer.
It didn't, but you know what's funny? Like I rolled up a bunch of characters in Star Wars The Old Republic, and I think all of them are human. And I'm like, I'm getting to the point, and like also when in Matt's D&D campaign, I only rolled humans, and all of a sudden I've gotten to this point in my life where I'm kind of over being like the goofy tentacle face dude, and I just want to be a human. I don't know why, but still want to be a Krogan more than a human, I guess, in Mass Effect. But I agree with Michael Coles. I think the humans in the Mass Effect universe are actually kind of cool.
They're always like the baseline, though, like in D&D and stuff. Humans are always, they're never bad. You know, like they're always good at something. So they're kind of like the you can do whatever with them characters.
Agreed. Speaking of which, I totally miss your D&D campaign, Matt. Makes me sad.
I know. I miss it too.
All right. Hemi Art, who is, by the way, an amazing, amazing artist and cosplayer. She's actually been in a couple conventions we've been at, and she follows us, and she's super nice. And also very funny from these Twitter responses. She appears to want Blasto.
I just looked it up. I had to look it up.
I love Blasto. It's too nice to ask to be Blasco. I just want to have pink tendrils of justice. Blasto's the first Hanar Spectre. And Blasto is only referred to in radio reports, and we've never, at least in my playthroughs, I don't think I ever got to see Blasto, but I love the idea of a Hanar Spectre. And amazing. I really hope that Blasto at least makes an appearance in Mass Effect 3. I can imagine, like, you know, just imagine Shepard being hunted down by, you know, being hunted down by Reapers and such, and then all of a sudden this fucking Hanar float by and saves his ass and is like, it's me, Blasto. It's just amazing.
Do you think the Hanar attack Metroid style, where they just attach to your head and like suck your brains out or something?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe they just tickle you.
I wonder, do you think that Blasto, the first Hanar Spectre, actually has armor, N7 armor? And does it resemble a trash can? Because I think that would be pretty phenomenal. And then things get a little ridiculous if one of you guys want to read the banter between Jesse Lamb and Bethany, who's Hemi Art.
Yeah, so Axel99 then writes back and says, Commander Shepard busting onto the set of the next Blasto movie, Blasto being temp squatty, that needs to happen.
I completely concur with that. That would be amazing.
Bethany replies, I would buy that DLC in a heartbeat, especially if it was part musical.
Things are getting very Saints Row the Third in Mass Effect in their eyes, but so very good answers. As always, guys, we completely appreciate when you reply to us on Twitter. It makes things a lot of fun for us, so definitely keep it up. I think that's it. We're pretty much wrapping it up. You guys have any final words before we vanish or get eaten by the Reapers?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. Well, as always, you can follow us at NerdAppropriate on Twitter. Matt, where else can you find us? Because I don't remember.
You can find us at NerdAppropriate on Twitter, Facebook.com/NerdAppropriate. You can search for NerdAppropriate on Google+, which is still a wasteland because none of us – I haven't put you guys in control of it yet, and I'm super busy. But we have that, and then you can also find us on iTunes. You can look us up, and please give us a rating. It does actually help, and we've actually been getting ratings, and it's very sweet of you people. We love you very much. And then you can email us at Ash, Scott, or Matt at nerdappropriate.com.
And you can play with us on SWTOR if you want also.
Yeah.
Get in touch with us.
Find the guild on the Sword of Ajunta Paul. Find the guild. That's not us. Find the Fold, which is our guild.
Yes. Yes. So,
and
what else? Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you want to say hi to us, all three of us will be at PAX East this year, which this year is the first week of April. In Boston.
Easter weekend.
Yeah, it is Easter weekend. It definitely beats Easter activities. So if you are heading to PAX and you want to say hey, we would love to meet you and chat about video games and high fives and all that fun stuff. So look cool. us up.
Indeed.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to Rated NA episode 47.
See ya.
Bye.